Welcome, everyone. Tonight, we have the pleasure of interviewing Mrs. Joy Morrow, who is the principal of New Hope Academy. And tonight, her topic is how to teach children to challenge authority respectfully. I respect Joy and her work. I've known her for over 20 years as a colleague. Joy is really a pioneer spirit, I have to say. She's always looking for new ways, wholesome ways, and approaches to educating children, and with the focus of educating children of heart and character. So I see Joy as really a principal leading the way to helping children in leadership. And so I think the topic is wonderful, how to teach children to challenge authority respectfully. And with that, I'd like to say hello, Joy.
Hi, I'm very glad to be a part of this program tonight, Sharon. So thank you for inviting me.
Well, it is a pleasure. And I would really love for people to know how you came into this. This is your 21st year, is that right?
We're moving into our 21st year in the fall, that's right.
Okay, that's a substantial amount of time to have developed quite a few things that I think our audience will love to hear about. Just for them, Joy, why don't you explain how it is that you became principal of this fabulous private school?
Well, originally my background was in social work and psychology. It wasn't in education. But I was the mother of three children, and my children were just coming into beginning school, and I was not happy with the experience that I was having with my child in the public school. And I was a part of a group of women who met once a month and talked about family and raising children and such, and it was a common experience among my peers that we were having a lot of things that were not in line with what we had hoped our children would experience in school. And it was a bit of a spiritual beginning for me because for me it was something I was praying over. I felt education was very critical for my child, and they were not having the kind of experience that I thought would take them where I hoped they would go, which is to love learning. And when I prayed about it, what kept coming to me was that we needed to start a school. If we couldn't find what we were looking for out there, we needed to start our own. However, that was a huge undertaking. I never thought that I would start a school. But there were a number of women that, the more we talked, it became clear it needed to be done. And I felt called to lead that group of women to organize to start a school. So we spent about 3.5 years. And we researched the best schools in the country, all the Blue Ribbon schools. We looked at their curriculum, their sizes, and we found an old public elementary school. We put second mortgages on our homes, so there's a lot of commitment. And then we basically created a school for our children and then went on to open it up for everybody else.
That's beautiful. It's beautiful because it's obviously divinely inspired, and it speaks to me about the power of women, maybe the power of motherhood. And, you know, there was that need and the courage it took for you and a small group of women, it seems, to say, you know what, we're just going to start a school. So there's a lot of power behind that for people, I think, that we can do this. You said something about the public schools not being in line with what you saw for your children, what you wanted for your children. Could you speak a little bit about what you hoped to see that was not happening in the existing schools that gave you this momentum to create a new school?
Well, we really, all of us were experiencing the same thing, that it wasn't even that the academic programs were that poor, although some of them in the area we were living in definitely were not up to par. It was more that there was not a support for the values we were trying to raise our children by. Just respect, responsibility, honoring mom and dad, those were things that it wasn't a core emphasis at the school. We basically hardly knew the other families that our children were growing up with. And the classes were overcrowded. There wasn't a clear sense of expectation for behavior on the part of the children. It was just really a sense that our children were kind of in a no man's land. They'd come home on the school bus at the age of five and get physically beaten up or hurt. And there was just nobody there who was focusing on those kind of things for the children. And when we took it to the principal or to the teachers or to the bus driver, there was always, well, you know, this is how kids are. Your kid has to toughen up, and we're doing our best, and this kind of thing. But it was just as if the whole focus was not what it needed to be.
How true and how wonderful that you would just say we could maybe do this a little bit differently. You know, Joy, you're a social worker by your background, and you're good at creating and systems. And it sounds to me, in hearing what you're saying, is that you didn't really feel that you had a community in the larger system of public schooling. That in creating a new school, New Hope Academy really offers a community. You've created that system where you can house some of these values you hope to see. And so tell us a little bit about now, you know, approaching your 21st year. Tell us a little bit about the values that that you've instilled within this community of school.
Well, it's interesting that you use the word community, because from the very first meeting where we all sat down and talked about actually undertaking the idea of starting a school, the one thing we all said was we didn't just want to create a school. We wanted to create a community that would support us to raise moral children, to raise really good human beings. And we decided from the beginning we weren't going to teach religion. We were all mothers from the same church, but we really felt that was the job of the families and the churches. But we felt it was the job of the school to support us to raise children who live by these values, and that we would feel free to bring those values into the school. So this is our 21st year, and you know, even though we were all moms from the same church who started New Hope, within a matter of a couple years, that changed. And we stopped counting when we hit 25 different religions at New Hope. It's every religion I've ever heard of, every denomination of Christianity, but also non-Christian, Muslim, Buddhist, Sikh, Jewish, Baha'i. But our attitude is there's just one God and one family of God's people, so it's hard raising good kids. Let's work together on this. And
that's
we try
beautiful.
Very hard not to be, yeah, I think it's beautiful. It's exactly what I wanted my kids raised with. And it appeals to families you have to be kind of broad-minded, because your child's going to be exposed to a lot of different ways that people show their respect and their love for God. But it's worked very well for us. We don't proselytize, but we do feel free to bring those values into what we do. And I think it changes the whole dynamic of the school. When you can talk about these things with kids, they own their values. It isn't just something that they're taught at Sunday school, or that there's a disconnect between home and school. There's that sense of community and continuity.
And there's that sense of community again. What a beautiful community that really reflects a global community. Global in that it brings in so many diverse backgrounds. Isn't that true of your staff as well? Your teaching staff is very diverse.
Extremely so. Again, we stopped counting when we hit about 25 different ethnic groups and countries and races and backgrounds. It's a very diverse clientele as well as the staff. And I think the children, especially the teenagers, really appreciate this. They're very proud of that diversity, and that it's something that that they embrace. And we talk about going beyond tolerance, that We're not just trying to tolerate something. We're trying to appreciate that diversity and appreciate other people's points of view and their faith perspective. And it kind of changes the whole dynamic when you're coming from those type of values. And it builds a different kind of community. I think children growing up in a community like that, they feel like a global citizen, and they don't harbor some of the limitations that children growing up in a very homogeneous kind of environment do. It's been a delight. So,
how wonderful! And I hear you talking about the respect in this community, honoring others' traditions and honoring the values. And among the values is the sense of respect, which is really what we're talking about tonight. I've been an educator for 35 years, and I know among my colleagues, and I know we've talked too, there's really been a lot of shift in how we're seeing children interact with this world today. And I know that a lot of parents are really worrying about how to raise a respectful child. And on the other hand, I really see that children are allowed to ask the questions that need to be asked. So our topic tonight, how to teach children to challenge authority respectfully, even that title itself is respecting a child's need, a growing child, to explore what is respectful, what is worth challenging. And it sounds like you have some width and breadth in your school where a child could actually challenge authority respectfully, and I'm asking, how do you teach that?
Well, at New Hope, we start with pre-K 3 and we go all the way through high school. So at different ages, you're faced with different kinds of challenges, but different opportunities to teach. So I think from an early age, children have to know that it's okay to ask questions if they don't understand something. And certainly, I guess I don't even know the word, when they're little, if the word challenging authority is something that they can understand. But it's a matter of treating another human being the way you want to be treated. So treating a teacher as a person, or a parent as a person, not just a person in an authority position over them, but just another person who deserves to be respected and treated with kindness. So it's oftentimes not what a child says, but it's helping them to understand how to say it so it isn't offensive. And again, that starts from the time they're very little.
That's true, and you're so lucky to have these children for a length of time like that. It would be wonderful to be a child starting at that young age and being allowed to be inquisitive and being honored about the question and respectfully answered, and growing into teenagerhood, the adolescence arena. As they step back to try to understand their own personhood, they are going to ask hard questions. They may challenge some things. And I think that is one of the biggest trends I've seen changing, is that teachers keep complaining, and many of them leave, actually. They complain, well, children are just not respectful like they used to be. And I see a lot of that complaint actually lead to staff leaving. How do you train your staff to handle these questions, handle this more maybe in the challenging arenas when maybe they're more adolescent stage? How do you train your teachers to answer to that?
Well, first of all, not all the children go from pre-K 3 up through high school. In fact, that's the rare child that we get to keep for so many years. We oftentimes have children come into our middle school and high school program who have no background with this pattern or this way of working. And that's probably the most challenging situation, because there certainly are models out there in the culture that are focused on challenging, but not necessarily in a respectful manner. So, you know, you get a lot of 12 or 14-year-old, you know, kids who feel like they can just treat everybody in the world like another 14-year-old kid. And they have, my feeling is that they need to understand when people are in a position to you, for example, if somebody's your employer in the future, or in a classroom situation when someone's your teacher or your parent, there needs to be a certain respect given to that position. At the same time, I try and teach my, you know, work with my teachers and train them to see each child, not just as a child, because I think sometimes when we talk about children, we tend to put them in a category of somebody who doesn't need to be listened to, or they're supposed to listen and we're supposed to talk. That tends to be something that has been inherent in education in the past, but rather that we see them as another person, or, if you will, another expression of God. And granted, children are immature. That's just who they are. They're still growing, and our job is to guide them. So when a child chooses to challenge authority, it isn't necessarily something negative. I see it as a teaching opportunity. It's a chance to be able to explain to them how to do that right, because there's a right way. And there's a way that will end up being effective. And if these boys and girls, or young men and women who are teenagers, are ever going to be leaders, and we do believe we're raising up the next generation of leaders, then those leaders have to understand, how do you challenge something? And how do you do it respectfully so that you can be heard, especially if what you have to say, you know, it may be something very worthy, but if you don't do it in the right way, then what you have to say may get lost. It may not be heard. So I feel it's one of the things that we talk a lot about with our teachers, and we have certain strategies we work with the students. A lot of it is trying to help them to put themselves in the other person's position. How would you feel if you were in this position and somebody did this to you? Or, you know, when you speak to somebody that way and they're in this situation, that could be embarrassing, it could be distracting, it's taking away from what's going on. And there's a right time and a right place, and helping them to understand how to begin to choose the right time, the right place, and the right words to do it.
That's beautiful, because that's what immaturity is all about, and it's not a bad thing. It doesn't need to be viewed as bad. It's natural, and we are the natural mentors in their life, at least at that moment, to help them do that in the right place and time. I also like what you said about teaching about the dignity of a person. If that is your culture that you're creating in your school, and I do call it kind of a culture because you're creating this community, your culture really is about the dignity of each person, and I think that's really beautiful. If I were a parent and I would be asking you, you know, there are a lot of times when, you know, growing children will ask the questions. They don't know that right time, that right place. I liked what you said about maybe the words weren't so awful. Maybe it wasn't the wording, but maybe it was the timing, or maybe it was the tone. All of those things play into doing it with dignity and grace. If I created a scenario for you, Joy, I bet you have in your principal's duties times when children are sent to your office. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
Probably a big part of the job. I really respect that, because it means you really have to speak with wisdom. Well, I'm gonna paint a scenario, and I'm gonna call a boy Roy, And let's say Roy has been sent to the principal's office, and that's you, right? That's you.
Yes.
And let's say that this is a middle school or high school student, like you've suggested. Maybe they don't have any training prior to this, or they've had some not such great experiences previously with a culture that gave any dignity or respect to each person. And you've learned that Roy became rather indignant about an assignment that the teacher gave, and it was reported to you that he told the teacher in front of the whole class that all the work was stupid and there's no way that I'm going to do it. And the teacher, I mean, this is rather shocking, especially in a culture that you're creating there. The teacher is shocked and embarrassed before the class, and now you find Roy in your presence, and as the principal, he's actually challenging authority, but again, he's missing that secret element, which is he didn't challenge authority respectfully. So, Principal Joy, what would you say to Roy?
Well, I'm just going to pretend you're Roy.
Okay, I'm Roy, and I'm mad.
Okay. My question to you, Roy, would be, when you did this to Ms. Muhammad, how do you think she felt in front of the whole class when you told the class that you thought her assignments and the work she was asking you to do was stupid? I mean, if you were in her shoes, how would you feel?
Well,
and
she wasn't listening to me, maybe. So maybe I don't care. Might be
okay.
My answer.
Well, you know, in the middle of a class, the only thing I can tell you is I'm sure Ms. Muhammad would really want to listen to you. I think she wants each one of her students to learn. And there's different ways, different people learn differently, and I think she would want to understand what it is that you feel maybe makes that assignment not so meaningful to you. But the time and place is what's important. It's not going to do you any good when you're in a situation like that to embarrass whoever, the teacher, or if it's an employer someday who's telling you to do something you don't want to do. It's not going to win you any brownie points to embarrass that person in front of everybody and to draw attention to yourself in that way. However, I would bet that if you, and you're entitled to your feelings also, you're entitled to your feelings about this assignment that was given, but what I would suggest to you is hold on to them. Don't necessarily blurt those things out in class. And at the end of class, ask Mrs. Muhammad when you go up to her, listen, I really am having a hard time thinking about how to do this assignment. I really don't like it. Can I talk to you about this? And set a time. It might be after class. You might have to come back at lunch or after school. And then tell her what it is that you find disagreeable. Okay? There may be another way that she can give you options. Instead of if it's a written paper and you don't find that meaningful to you, maybe you can do a PowerPoint presentation or something different. If it's the material itself, maybe there are elements you can bring in that haven't been brought in that would make this more meaningful to you and would share that information with your classmates. But you have to talk to her about it, and you have to do it in a way that she can hear you. If you're embarrassing her or you're accusing her and her work of being stupid, it's pretty hard for her to listen to you. Can you understand what I'm saying?
I do. I understand. I'll ask for a meeting. Maybe she'll let me make a movie.
I think she probably would, or certainly you can ask. So,
I like.
Anyway,
what you
Sharon,
said.
This is very much, you know, this is very much the kind of thing I have to do with the kids all the time because our this generation is so opinionated, and they also somehow feel that they have a right to challenge anything that they aren't happy with or they don't think serves their purpose or that isn't convenient or doesn't fit into their plans. They're accustomed to I don't know if being pampered is quite the right word, but they're accustomed to being allowed to do this. And that's not necessarily saying that their parents have done something wrong. It's just the nature of this generation and of the culture they're a part of. So I do think God has good reason for them to be that way, and I don't think smashing that is the way to go. I think we have to learn how to work with it and value it. So anyway.
Yes. Well, I like what you said, because you said that in that approach, you validated his feelings, meaning it's okay that you might feel that way. I mean, you did say, yeah, you may feel that way. I think that helps them, secondly, be listened to. And you did that as well. You gave him options. So, you know, he can think a little bit out of the box and say, oh, well, maybe I'm not so trapped. Perhaps that was the feeling he was feeling. Who knows? But you gave him options to think a little bit larger than the assignment. And timing and patience, values to that, that's something that we don't do in our immaturity very easily. But you're speaking to that, and I think the whole experience is you have given him the charge back. You have put it in his lap to be responsible about talking about it in a timely way. Roy needs to make an appointment with Mrs. Mohammed, and now you've put that responsibility back in his lap with a little guidance, and hopefully he can try again and have a good outcome. And you've taught him also that he, whatever his frustration was about, he probably will not accomplish his own goal when he has this kind of disrespectful attitude. And I really liked that whole dialogue that you used with Roy. So thank you. That's a really excellent way to see things. And yes, we are not, it is a different culture, don't you think? You've been in this field as long as I have, Joy, and do you see that this has changed over the years, that this kind of generation comes up to the challenge? For whatever reasons you said, it just is.
Well, I thought a lot about this because, as you mentioned, a lot of colleagues have chosen to leave the field because they don't know how to work with this group of kids, and they're feeling something's wrong, and they aren't sure how to meet that challenge. And, you know, I don't know if I can share this with you or not, but when I prayed about it and put a lot of thought into it, what came to me was that this generation has a very special mission. You know, the world has been taken down some pretty dark roads because people blindly followed authority, and they were taught to follow no matter what. Whatever your elders, you know, tell you to do, you do it. Whatever authority tells you to do, you do it. And I think that the world's consciousness has to come to a different level, and that this generation is not going to blindly follow somebody. They will let you know that you had better darn well have a good reason for asking them to do something. And if you're willing to listen to them and hear them out and listen to their questions and, if you will, patiently explain yourself to them, then generally I find they'll work with you, and they will give you their respect, and they will follow your lead. But they have to trust you, and they have to know that you're worthy to be followed. And I do think that you know, heaven has prepared this generation to have the strength of nature and character to maybe help take the world in a little different direction. It's going to take some pretty strong people to do that. And I think this generation.
I agree. I so agree. I think that there is an evolution, sense of consciousness, and these are going to be the pioneers probably for that. And they do come in with a great deal of strength and will. And I think we kind of get knocked off course sometimes in helping raise them or educate them. But I love what you said, Joy, because we're in the position of their teachers or their parents. And I think that what we can do, what you just said, that I think is a really important guidance for us, is that we really have to be unafraid ourselves, to be challenged, not to become defensive. There's no reason for that. We're there to guide and direct, but if we're in a defensive place, they probably won't listen to us. I think they're looking for people who are truly authentic, and that's my experience, is when these kids who challenge authority find someone who's truly authentic, and they don't pretend to know everything, they're open to options, new ideas, but they're still willing to stand their ground in the respect issue, because it brings dignity to both. It brings dignity to them. I think that that is a beautiful way to really look at how these, we as the people meeting these children, can help them in challenging, you know, when they do challenge authority, to help them do it more respectfully. Wonderful. Well, in wrapping up, I think that this has been a really, really wonderful session, and I hope that a lot of people will have a chance to listen to this interview, because I think it's in the heart of every teacher. I know myself training new teachers in my time, there was always that issue of how to handle the classroom management, especially in terms of respect. And if we see these new children who have this power, it's requiring us to also bump up our consciousness and how we receive these children if we're really going to be a true leader for them, with the purpose in mind that they have to follow us, but with the purpose in mind that we as the leaders will help them be the next leaders. So thank you, Joy. And I wanted to see if there was anything else that you might want to comment on before we wrap up this call.
Well, I look forward to doing more with you in the future. We've had the pleasure of working together in the past, and I wanted folks to know too that you are doing a seminar for New Hope Academy families in the month of May, where you're going to be offering advice on parenting. And I'm hoping that many of our families will take advantage of that, because I know what a wealth of information you have and what a resource you are. And I'm really hoping that they have an opportunity to sample that a bit and experience that with you, Sharon. So I want to thank you so much for providing that opportunity to our parents.
Really my honor. I think you have a very special community there, and I've seen it grow from having a few children 20 years ago into from the small grades, youngest grades, to all the way to 12th grade now. And it's really a wonderful community that is exemplary of the values you spoke of. You really are educating children of heart and character. You're really educating leaders. And I thank you for that. So thank you for all the pioneering work you've done, Joy. It's marvelous. I'm sorry I didn't introduce myself in the beginning. I'm Sharon Goodman, and Joy and I have had a long-time friendship, and we actually taught each other through those years. Her staff would come to my school, which is Happy Heart Day School in Pennsylvania. Sometime I would come to New Hope Academy. And so we've had a long history of sharing these ideas about leadership in the future. And really, that makes this an honor to be able to come back and really share it once again with this culture that you have. Thank you so much. I'm going to end there as far as our talk goes, and I wanted to see if there was anybody out there in the audience that might like to ask a question. Yes. The mute is off now, so is there anybody who would like to ask a question? Go right ahead.
Well, I was just listening to it. I thought it was excellent, and there's a lot of things that I agree with Joy on there. I've been in teaching for a long time, and the demeanor of the students has changed considerably.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I think I've had to change my ways a little bit to kind of go along with that. But every now and then you get a student who just doesn't seem to get it as far as accepting how to talk to people.
Yeah.
And either they don't really get it or they just don't really care, one or the other. You know, it's hard to tell that too. But how do you deal with something like that then when they just – it just isn't going through, you're not getting through to them very well.
Well, I think you have to exhaust all possibilities. I mean, sometimes you do feel like you're talking till you're blue in your face. Generally, we try and get parents involved. And there are times when that is not effective, sometimes because we find that the parents are modeling something for the student that is not so appropriate, quite honestly. And as much as I hate to do it, but there are times when I have had to dismiss students from the school, which I know many public schools don't have that option, but that was one of the reasons we created our school, was to be able to create a culture that would support the kids. And if you do get a couple students in there whose attitude is to... regardless of how much you choose to work with them, they want to be. They feel completely justified in treating anybody disrespectfully. They treat their peers disrespectfully. They treat their teachers disrespectfully, and their parents. Under those circumstances, I may choose not to have that child at the school because it has such a strong effect on the other kids. I think hand in glove, I'll work with parents for a long time, provided they're willing to work with me, and the same thing with the student. But sometimes nobody really wants to change, and we may not be the right school for that family if they really don't support the values that are the backbone of our philosophy at the school. So that's an unfortunate situation sometimes, but it's a reality at times too.
Right. Sometimes you just keep talking to them, and it's just real difficult. But
well, there's been times when I've dismissed students from the school who were in that type of situation, and I've had other students come up to me and thank me profusely later because they felt like the atmosphere changed so much, and they felt relieved not to have to constantly be around somebody who was treating everybody around them rudely or disrespectfully. So I think that's part of the responsibility of an administration, is to make sure that the children are in an atmosphere where they feel they can learn and that they're not having to endure that kind of mistreatment, and to watch other people endure that kind of mistreatment. So
That's wonderful, because you really are taking the guardianship there of protecting what is really a really beautiful community. And sometimes you do have to play out that guardianship. Well, our time is up, and I want to thank you for the good question. And I would like to say to all the New Hope Academy parents that what a wonderful, beautiful culture you are creating, and it's honor to be interviewing today. I hope to see you soon at our next group of talks. Have a good night, everybody.
All right. Good night.